Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week in the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, in the heart of Iowa, in the heart of it all. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, the Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. Find out more information about the Mucky Duck Pub, because they have some interesting events on certain nights of the week and things like that. So go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Thanks to the Mucky Duck, and thanks to your listeners for joining us today. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We are sort of in the time of year where KHO does a fundraiser bit, and we're kind of backing off for the holidays here and just thinking about holiday things. But I want to mention that you learn the nicest thing on the radio. Because of the fundraiser events, I visited some other live shows, local live shows that were being produced here in the KHOI studios. And I spent a little bit of time with the guys on Science Bites. That is a local science show, and because of them, I want to thank them.
Yeah, we have a few scientists in town here.
We do. And because of them, I actually remember to look up and catch a few meteor showers last week. It was a little hazy, but I saw a few meteors. So I'm they're supposed to be lucky, I think, when you see a falling star, and there it was.
Okay, so you can't tell the difference between a falling star and a meteor, right?
Same thing. Because heaven forbid, if it really was a star falling, we'd be in trouble. That's what they call them, meteors. You know, meteors, they look like falling stars, and they're really pretty. Well, now it's time to slide into the holidays.
Fasten your seatbelts. Yeah. Here we go.
Clean the house. That's a thing you kind of do this time. And I've spent a little time untangling lights. I was sure I put my Christmas lights back in an orderly fashion, but somehow somebody got in there and snaggled them all up. But anyway, untangled some lights this week. I also want to mention last weekend, Central Iowa Barn Dance had a really nice it was a great gathering. We had a great barn dance. There is a tradition. Actually, it started in the Chicago area. The dances around Thanksgiving, or actually around Christmas too, but the dances around Thanksgiving are sometimes called breaking up Thanksgiving, which it kind of makes sense. You're kind of eating a little bit too much, and you're kind of partying a little bit too hard. And the breaking it up is getting out on the dance floor and shaking it loose and making room for more pies.
Burning more energy.
Right. So we did. We broke up Thanksgiving, although usually our Thanksgiving dance happens after Thanksgiving, the Saturday after, but this one because of how the calendar fell. But we're thinking of Thanksgiving. So today we're going to plan for that turkey dinner or whatever else you have in mind here. Today in the Donalana Kitchen, we have thoughts about the holiday table and thoughts about food for everyone. Donna, what are some thoughts on Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, I'm really a classicist at Thanksgiving. You know, somehow you've got to have a cranberry thing, some sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, of course the turkey.
Yep.
Of course the pumpkin something or other. You know, and you fiddle around with various combinations, and you look in all the food magazines, and they're all doing on the themes of, and there's, you know, various versions or ethnic versions or little twisters of the plot usually. But, you know, I think the basics are pretty good, and we shouldn't mess too much with them. My favorite tool for Thanksgiving, the InstaRead thermometer.
Oh, very good.
Not an expensive item. Not a fancy one that you have to plug in or charge or X-ray on or anything. You just poke it in the bird, and it's got a little dial on the top, and you want it to get to 165 is the magic number.
165.
165.
Yeah, okay.
And you got to remember to stick it in so it's deep into the bird, so everything is cooked, but not touching the bones because the bones will hold more heat and not give you an accurate reading. So the trick is to stick it into the thigh somewhere without hitting a bone.
Ah.
And then
we can do that.
165, and you're ready to rock and roll.
I have a article here, advice. Advice is all over the Internet. It says, cook your turkey at 350. Okay, that's fine.
Well, you start it initially for about 15 to 20 minutes at higher.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and then turn it down.
Because the idea is, well, one of the nicer parts of a turkey is the fact it's got this crunchy, wunchy skin on
right.
the outside. And if you kind of zap it first with heat, put it in a hot oven to start with, and then back off.
Yeah, and there's some good advice, because I kind of was thumbing through what various officials are saying how the best way to do it is. And some of them were good ideas, is to put some liquid in the bottom of the pan so that your drippings stay really flavorful and don't get too burned. So my favorite suggestion so far was actually apple cider. I thought that was a good pairing. I mean, you can just use water or broth or wine or any of those things. The last 10 years everybody's been into brining and all of that stuff, but you know what? Not me.
It's always good. See, if somebody else wants to do that, that's fine with me. But I agree. You look at some of these. I also am picking up the cooking magazines.
It's a big beast to begin with.
Yeah, it's
big.
It's big. But the idea of trying to do a themed, like wrapping it in bacon and sticking tiki torches in it,
I've never, ever had one of those. But
so here we are whining and extolling the virtues of tradition. Everybody likes a good turkey.
Yeah, and the issue is getting a good one, you know? I mean, maybe if you're buying the standard American-produced heavy-breasted turkey, which does have a tendency to dry out in the breast, you know, maybe brining would help that sort of bird. But there are lots of other options. There's organic. There's the readily available now. What are they called? The heritage breeds.
Mm-hmm.
There's, lots of... I've seen some pretty good turkeys around, and the prices seem to be quite reasonable this year. So you get a good bang for your buck.
Good. You mentioned that there is a tendency for some turkeys to have a dry breast. Does the idea of basting things help?
Although here's what happens when you baste. You know, every time you open the oven, you're letting a lot of the heat out, and so your temperature is fluctuating a lot more. A good coating of just butter or even laying a little bacon over the breast at the beginning makes it a little more self-basting. Or the thing that I have always done for years, I guess is a trick I learned from my mother, is after it's cooked for a while, like maybe halfway through, I tint the whole pan with aluminum foil, which keeps it from drying out. And then at the end, you pull the foil off again and let it brown up because that breast skin will burn more easily than the rest of the bird. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of depends on the size of the bird. The bigger the birds, then they have to be in the oven a long time. You know, like a 9 to 11-pound bird is only 2.5 hours. 15 to 17 is 3.5 hours. And if you go up to, the really big birds, which are really hard to fit into anything, you can do as much as 5 hours. So, or the other thing, I still have my mother's, we always called it the turkey roaster.
Those big things you find in church basements.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? There's something, first of all, if you're using that to cook the turkey, it frees your oven up for all the other things, which can be an issue. Plus, the kind of rounded dome. Plus, it the one I have is older than me. Now, you know that's really old. And it still has its rack in it. Mm-hmm. You can lift it out. It's slightly bigger than the ones that you can buy now. So you can do a bigger bird. In fact, one year we did a whole fetal pig wrapped up in it.
Ah!
You know, like a roast suckling pig. Oh, we did it for Christmas one year. But
oh, you must have had to squish.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, it holds a fairly large bird. And then, of course, those things have a slightly domed lid, which does make the, you know, the moisture in the pan up and circulate around rather than if you're roasting it in an open oven. So I'm a fan of the turkey roaster, actually.
That's very good. Very good. So.
But the most important and the least expensive is to get your instant read thermometer. It just makes everything so simple. You just stick the little thing in there, take a reading, and then you know exactly where you're at. And, of course, once it's cooked, it's kind of nice to let it rest about 20 or 30 minutes while you're making the gravy.
I have learned that. Well, actually, for almost any meat, let it rest a
little while. Yeah.
It does.
It won't get cold.
It just kind of suck things back in. Mm-hmm. I do suck in some of them. And here's a warning, a hot button alert. If you haven't unfrozen your turkey by now, get to it. Because those,
that's right.
Those things, you can go out and buy a fresh turkey, which is wonderful. Or like Scrooge, you could send the boy down to the corner store to get the fresh goose. But most of the stuff that we get is our big frozen honkers.
And the big ones take longer to thaw. Especially, are you thawing it in the refrigerator?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm not doing the turkey this year.
Oh,
but
good for you.
That's potlucks for Thanksgiving are the best. See, you do the turkey. I'm doing dressing, and I'm doing some other stuff. But, yeah, another good place, if I have some big covered things, storing it on a cold porch to thaw, because during the day it's above, you know, at 30 degrees or 40.
Yeah, that one is weather dependent. I mean,
these days it's
been good, but I hear we're about to have a quick turn into the rather frigid and extremely windy territory.
What is it? My goodness.
Another bombogenesis. I mean, we are creating new weather words all the time. So
what is this word?
Bombogenesis is what I read on the news site. Something, it starts with a hurricane. This one, I think, in the Pacific.
They do.
And they're warning that all over the country, the weather is not going to be good for travel.
Oh, my goodness.
It will be difficult.
Oh, my goodness.
And it did say Ames has some kind of alert for up to 50 miles per hour of wind tomorrow night.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Burr.
Well, settle in. Get the wood pile piled up and have all your supplies in early. And
it is.
You
it
know.
Is. I'm looking forward to the winter because I have a very heat-producing cat. I have a large cat who has provides CTUs, cat thermo units, and that sucker is going to be on my lap when the wind blows, I tell you. That's good. Also, let's just talk for a bit about stuffing. I love stuffing.
There's so many options for stuffing. Every year, and I love the stuffing. And
that's the best part.
You know, the turkey is not that difficult.
Yeah.
But it's what you put in it. Yeah. So every year I kind of, you know, you have to figure out who's coming. Are they vegetarian? If they're vegetarian, you can't put the sausage or the bacon in the stuffing. Rah, 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 rah. Cornbread stuffing or regular wheat bread. Or do you want rice stuffing? Or the options are endless. Are you going to put nuts in it? Are you going to put chestnuts in it? Chestnuts have not been good this year, but I do love putting chestnuts in. Do you want fruit in yours?
Actually, I was going to make cornbread stuffing, and I do have a few. And it was like you said, it wasn't a good year. I do have a few local chestnuts.
Ooh.
So those will go. But I was going to put corn kernels.
Kernels with the cornbread.
Yeah, with cornbread. And probably some apple. I like that sort of thing. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I like a little fruit, a little nut, a little sausage. A brioche and chestnut stuffing, for example.
For gosh sakes.
Well, that's you know, good. Brioche is just a rich, eggy bread.
Eggy bread, yes.
You know, so, I mean, there's so many options. Hard to say what's classic. I think it depends on what you had, what your mother made, right?
That's true. And making the gravy to go on it, I don't know why. I was kind of corralled into doing that as a kid while the other women in the kitchen were doing the other things. Come over here, Alana. Make the gravy. And I've made lumpy gravy and way too wild. I've made all kinds of gravy. But my gravy is pretty good now. Yeah.
Do you do a milk-based gravy or do you do a...
No, I use a cornstarch just in some of the... I take some of the dripping, some of the stock and stir that up while it's still cool and then put that in the boiling other stock or other stuff.
With drippings. Any alcohol added?
No, I don't.
Sherry is sometimes quite good.
Oh, a suggestion. Yeah. A suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I maybe shouldn't do that. There's supposed to be like kids around the table. Of course,
it cooks away. In fact, if they're kids, it's good to get their palate a little more accustomed to these odd flavors, you know.
That's true.
Not too much, just a little.
Yeah, you always appreciate it when a kid is a good eater. You
know? Yeah. Well, I'm a milk and cream gravy maker.
Oh, you put milk and cream in. Okay.
I like it like that. Right. We've got options.
And we do. We will look forward to it. Another possibility to think about is if it's just a small group of you. You don't have to cook a 20-pound turkey. You can just cook a turkey breast or something. Or some other kind of meat. But now you can just cook a turkey breast. Here's a suggestion from an executive chef, Eric Lees, at Spiaggia. I don't know where that is. He talks about taking the breast and splitting it and cooking the breast flat and just having the breast. So there you go.
Oh, it's called spatchcocking.
Oh, I ran across that. Yes, but... with spatchcocking? That's
well, you can do it. Most traditionally, it's done with a chicken or a small, like a poulet, where you kind of cut it down and bend it at its backbone so it's like laying flat.
Right, right. That sounds like a good thing to do. It's kind of, you butterfly it open. Yes.
Right. Oh, I mean, with the turkey breast, the reason for doing that probably would to be to get more flavoring into the meat. And, of course, it cooks more quickly that way, too. But you've got more surface area that you could be rubbing herbs into or whatever you're doing. Yeah.
Ah, word of the day, spatchcocking.
Spatchcocking.
Spatch is an S-P-A-T-C-H. Cocking.
Spatchcocking.
That's breaking open your bird and having at it. There you go.
Yeah, and that's... probably a really clever idea if there's like maybe only four people, 4 to 6 or something.
And
of course, I like the dark meat, so
I do too. Oh, we'd be fighting over that. We would too.
And if you're only doing the breast, you're not getting any dark meat. So.
That's true. Actually, another one good thing about Thanksgiving is leftovers. Leftover dressing and turkey is good. We always tend to overdo. I mean, this is a tradition of, here we are at the end of the harvest. You can understand people doing this in cultures for centuries and centuries. Okay, we finally made it inside. We haven't died. Too many of us haven't died over the years.
And we have a large supply of food.
And we have a large supply of food. And we don't necessarily have a way to keep all of it. So let's eat that turkey.
Let's celebrate.
Get out the whatever and the grog and the what. And let's do that. And after the meal, even before... people have probably ran into this even before we had football games to watch. There is this kind of full feeling and the idea that you have to take a really, really long nap.
A little snooze by the fire.
Actually, that's not a bad thing. They, over the past years, they have been talking about the chemical tryptophan as that's the
amino acid that's prevalent in turkey among other places.
Mm-hmm. But That's not a bad thing.
No, it's supposed to make you nice and relaxed and sleepy.
Yeah. It just kind of fills you.
Well, you know, the other reason that people tend to feast so much this in traditional societies, now we're a long way from this, butchering was done in the colder months because, you know, anything if you butcher in the summer, the temperatures are too high. And if you're doing a large quantity of meat, even the size of a turkey, it can spoil rather quickly. So like fall hog butchering, and it's a good time of year to do a turkey. In the summer, you know, you can do chickens and little things that you're going to eat all in one sitting. But this season in the nice, crisp weather is a good time for butchering.
It is. It is. And we always think about the we blame the pilgrims for the first Thanksgiving. That isn't really when it happened. But good heavens, by the time the pilgrims got here, they were just probably so glad to eat anything any old time.
Yes, and if the Indians hadn't fed them, they probably would have starved to death. So,
and we must remember that actually venison, deer, was probably a big chunk of things going on, too. Here's a little thing that I ran across. People talk about pumpkin pie. Oh, that American is pumpkin pie. And it really is an American thing, but really, until it was popularized in the mid-19th century, when things like Christmas was popularized, and the people were moving into the cities, and they were trying to remember the rural past, and everybody was getting nostalgic about things, and people started painting pictures of the pilgrims at the first Thanksgiving, and squash was always a big deal. Squash was good, but pumpkins really was animal food. Pumpkins was what you fed to your pigs. But
well, and there are lots of varieties.
There's lots of
pumpkins that don't have a lot of flavor.
A lot of flavor, right. But the idea, people started to see those things in paintings and popular culture and newspapers and things. Harper's Weekly magazine and Winslow Homer paintings. And recently we did that wrote When the Frost is on the Pumpkin that poem, and that was the time that...
That wasn't James Whitcomb Riley, was it?
That was it.
Okay.
Ding, 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 you win.
Okay.
So it kind of made pumpkins... Now it's kind of... You can't have it without pumpkin pie, and...
Well, but...
But...
My pumpkin pies are always made with buttercup... Not butternut, but buttercup squash.
Right. So it's one of those things that... We have a group memory, which is what traditions are made of. We talked about traditions. And so pumpkin pie. This is KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. welcome back. We are talking about the holiday table. That was a tune called the Dill Pickle Rag, which leads me, oh, here's a great segue, which leads me to talk about all those little condiments that we have. Families do like to get out their jars of this and that when they have a family holiday dinner. I do. I always take a pickle plate or something that you've put together and relishes and, I don't know. I grew up with, I had one brother, and when you had a family dinner, Thanksgiving especially, Mom would put out a bowl of black olives. And I hate to admit to this, but both my brother and I were the stick the black olives on all your fingers.
Absolutely.
And stand there. I don't know. It wasn't probably very good table manners, but it did keep us quiet. So a little thinking
that
about.
That was probably the brilliance of your mother there.
Yep, yep. I mean, normally you wouldn't deal with dilly-dallying around at the table, but black olives were a treat, and getting out those pickles and relishes and things, everybody kind of brings their best. One of the things that we talk about every year, and actually other people talk about, is this recipe called horseradish cranberry relish.
Oh, yes. If it's Thanksgiving, we must mention this recipe on the air. We do it every year.
Okay, this recipe originally came from NPR, National Public Radio reporter, Susan Stanberg. She used to read it on the air as an annual Thanksgiving tradition. And I heard it, oh, way, way back when I was a young bride. And I thought, well, I'm going to try this. And it happens every year. You bring it, and somebody says, oh, what's that? And they taste it, and they really do like it.
It's really good, and it's really easy.
It's really easy. 2 cups fresh cranberries, 1 small onion, 1/2 cup, 3/4 cup sour cream, and 2 tablespoons. I put in more. 2 tablespoons, or to taste, of prepared horseradish. You grind the cranberry and onions and fold in everything else. Then you put it in a container and freeze overnight. The freezing kind of melds all the flavors. And 2 hours before you want to eat it, take it out of the freezer and let it thaw. It should cool but not be mushy.
Grind as in food processor.
Yeah, right? Yeah, grind as in food processor. I suppose you grind it lots of different ways, but it's really a food processor is the way to do it, I believe. And then you stir lightly, and I put this on my recipe. Put it in a pretty dish. Put it in a don't just plop down the Tupperware you froze it in. It's just not that. But anyway, this is surprisingly good with a holiday turkey, and it goes well with beef or pork, too. That recipe, horseradish cranberry relish, is on our collection of recipes called the Don Lana Kitchen Show Recipes that you can find on KHOIFM.org. Go to the talk shows, go to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and you can find past shows there. But there's other recipes. We just kind of don't know what to do with them, so we put them there, and you can find out lots of things. You may get inspired. Take a look through our recipe page. Do you see anything there, Donna, that might be apropos for the holiday?
Well, I have to bring up once again, right listed next to the horseradish cranberry relish is my recipe for pumpkin cobbler, which for people who don't like to bother to roll out crusts and do the whole pastry bit, it's a great recipe. You just mix a cake-like batter, you pour it in a pan of butter, you pour the pumpkin mix on top of it, and then, I forget, dot it with butter or something and put the whole thing in the pan like a casserole. And it has all the advantages of pumpkin pie without the work.
Now, that sounds real fine for the holidays.
I'm not making one this year, but almost every year I do.
That's very good. So go to KHOIFM.org and find the Donna Lana Kitchen page. Let's talk a little bit about the concept of enough. Do we have enough when we come to the holidays here?
This is related to gratitude, right?
Gratitude, being thankful, yes, yes.
I'm grateful that we have enough, like that.
We do, sort of, we do.
We got to remind ourselves about this all the time.
I read in the paper recently, the local paper, that...
And we are grateful that we have one.
Yes, yeah.
The Ames Tribune.
That there are... hungry people here in Ames and in central Iowa. Matter of fact, I was surprised. There's all the local food banks and food pantries and free kitchens are really, they're busy all year and they need your help
and
all year.
And we do have quite a good system in town.
Yes, we do. You can, I went to.
Like, including food at first.
Yeah, yes. I just Googled Ames food pantries, and you can come up with all kinds of ways to access things like that. But I read, it said Story County, which is the county we're in, has the highest food insecurity rate of all the 99 counties in Iowa, according to Feeding America, a national organization.
That's surprising, isn't it?
That equates to 14.9% of Story County residents who are considered food insecure. That means, it doesn't mean you're totally destitute, but it means you don't have enough money in your regular budget to cover all of your basic needs, rent, transportation, housing, food. So something has to give. There's a lot of people on the edge, and there are many groups that kind of take it on themselves to fill in the blanks. We, on a past Donald on a Kitchen show, we talked to Patty Yoder from Food at First and talked about what it's like to prepare food for lots of people. Most of us are fortunate to have enough, or even more. Most of us go to bed each night with full bellies and we wake up in the morning with the assurance of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Not everyone, even here in central Iowa.
We have with us Patty Yoder, who is the executive director and coordinator at Food at First. And tell us a little bit about what Food at First is.
Food at First is a free meal program and food pantry. We serve a free meal every single day of always. We don't take holidays off or any time off.
And this is currently it's located where?
At 611 Clark Avenue in the basement of the First Christian Church.
Okay. So.
Oh, very good. How many people, on an average meal, how many people are there to eat?
To eat, about 75.
Oh, my.
We consider an average. It goes up and down a lot, but that's. And
7 days a week.
7 days a week, yes.
The people that come and come and enjoy these meals, are they clients? Are they eaters? What do you call them?
We call them our guests. They're guests in our home, and we don't discriminate upon anything. We don't ask any questions. Anyone is welcome. If you say you're hungry, please come.
And there are people hungry.
There are. As you said, we think of Ames, Iowa as being rather affluent, but there are hungry people in Ames, Iowa. There are homeless people in Ames, Iowa. There are all kinds of needs. And sometimes it's just people that are single, don't maybe cook for themselves very well, and they just come for fellowship.
Yes. There's a lot of reasons people might be hungry. They may be between jobs, or
exactly.
Maybe have a health issue. They may,
yes.
Or yeah. And so, do these guests come back again and again? And do they help in the kitchen?
Yes, both. They come. Yes, over and over again. We see new faces all the time too. Sometimes for a short while, maybe in a short need, or they move on. But. We do have regular guests, and they are very willing to help out. It's very fun. There's a group that quite regularly asks if we need help in the kitchen or in the pantry, and it's...
Who washes the dishes?
The volunteers.
Oh, good.
See, there you go.
Yes, we have an excellent dishwasher that was also purchased with a grant.
That's very important.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Oh, my.
For these real dishes.
Good. How many... You have... Different people, different groups that come in and cook dinner. So who are some of these people?
Oh, it's a wide variety of people. We have regular groups that come, for example, different churches in town or organizations or Iowa State students pick, like, for example, they'll come every Thursday of, you know, third Thursday of the month or second Tuesday of the month or what. And they come every single month and do their meal. And for the remainder of the slots, we put an online sign up. And it just fills in. It's amazing. In the summer, we struggle a bit when the students are gone and mm-hmm. people are on vacations. But for the school year, it's always full.
So it's basically other churches, other civic organizations, and each group kind of takes one night a month and
yes.
makes a meal.
Yes.
And how do you know how many people are going to come?
Well, you don't. It's
you
a little
just guess.
Yeah, it's a bit of a guessing game. Mm-hmm. I usually say to cooks to cook for 80 to 100. It's fine to do the 100 and have extra because our guests love to take food home.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I talked a little before about the concept of having enough. Do you ever? So you don't really ever have too much. There's always people to eat.
Exactly.
Oh,
yes.
That's wonderful. Yes. And who decides what gets cooked?
Well, we call our cooks head chefs, and they don't necessarily have to be a chef, but that's what we call them. They have free will to cook whatever they want. So we have a large variety of meals. It's always fun and new and really delicious. And so the cooks just come and shop in the pantry and figure out what they want to cook and cook from what we have, basically. We try not to spend any money. We mm-hmm. rarely do. You can easily cook for 100 without spending a dime.
It's nice that we have ways of sharing, putting things back into the community. That's wonderful.
So, Patty, tell us how you get all of this food.
Yes. The food doesn't all just come to us. We have to work at picking it up, or gleaning, as we call it. So we have a whole group of gleaners that it's a little bit of a thankless job. No one sees their glory that they, but they help us so much. Stores will collect food for us. For example, Hy-Vee Break Bakery. They collect their bread and pastries, and they would like it picked up at 6:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you are late to glean that food, they throw it away.
The gleaners sound really important. They're the connection.
They really are.
This is why you're called the coordinator. You have to coordinate all this.
Woo! Yes, there's a lot to coordinate. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of helpers, so I don't do this single-handedly. A lot of them. And so that's huge. Those people are going out every day to pick this food up and get it to us, you know, to the church promptly so that we can distribute it as fast as possible.
Right, and they have to be careful of food sanitation and temperature things.
Exactly.
And it's good.
It is.
It's a piece of work.
It is. It is. We have large deliveries or pickups 3 times a week from Walmart and Sam's Club. And those are so large that, I didn't talk about our van. You've probably seen it if you've driven by.
You've got a van.
A beautiful van that Walmart donated to us, free and clear.
Good.
And, it's a large utility van, but 3 days a week, it's not big enough for us to pick up the food.
So you have to do multiple trips.
Well, we actually borrow a moving truck from the Bach Realty.
Wow.
3 times a week and go pick up that food. And so that takes a lot of hands to pick it up, to unload the truck, to put it away. And we have a core group of volunteers that just works tirelessly. They are amazing people, put in so many hours. And for example, grocery stores will give us, we didn't talk about this, that they'll give us fresh produce, like a package of tomatoes, where one is bad, so no, a customer won't buy it in the store, but the other tomatoes in that package, there's nothing wrong with. So our other group of volunteers, the sorters, they will pick out the bad one, put it in a bucket, which we save then for a farmer that comes several times a week.
Compost.
To pick up. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the good tomatoes or whatever produce it is we give away at the pantry or use in the meals.
How, like you say, how do you plan? How do you plan?
Yeah. I do have a couple numbers.
Okay.
Last year, we served 27,000 meals.
Wow.
And we distributed 350,000 pounds of food through the market.
Patty, thank you so much.
So, Patty, what's for supper tonight?
Well, I'm not exactly sure.
What would be a typical supper?
Well, what was last night?
last night was a chicken pot pie and some mac and cheese that was donated from a restaurant and a wonderful green salad and a fresh fruit salad and assorted desserts and milk. The Picket Fence Creamery donates milk to us every single week.
Good for them.
Yes, and we had juice and, you know, just a fabulous meal.
So, how to get in touch with you? And
my email is patty, P-A-T-T-Y, at foodatfirst.com. The foodatfirst.com website is full of information.
It is. It's a great website. I looked at it yesterday. Yes. Lovely, lovely.
Yes, there's on there you can find my email and phone number and otherwise just walk in the door.
And there's always something to do, I bet you. Thank you. Thank you. This is great.
This is really, really.
Welcome back. That was a little talk with Patty Yoder from Food at First, feeding people for the holidays, making sure everyone has enough. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI. This is Community Radio. That was a waltz. A winter waltz called Waltz d'hiver. Huh? Sort of French sounding there. It was played by Tom McKenzie and Patty Casey from their CD called Shady Rill. Ah, a winter waltz. It's about time. There's snowflakes flying soon. And we're talking about the holidays here.
Yep. We're on the countdown now.
Ah. Speaking of good food, I want to remind you that on the Donna Lana Kitchen website, on the recipe page, there's a good cornbread recipe. And I would like to also say that a good dessert, if you don't want to do a pumpkin pie, or actually, as I prefer to think of it, in addition to the pumpkin pie, a chocolate Linzer tort is not too bad. It's kind of like a really good rich cookie with jelly on it.
Oh, where I'm going for, I think we will have pies in the plural, right? There has to be a pecan pie. There has to be the pumpkin pie. Has to be an apple pie.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Or some fruit pie.
Okay. Everybody has their favorite. Yeah, they do.
I'll have some of all of them.
Yeah. A small piece. They make them round, so you can, like, slice them and kind of even them off. There's the other pumpkin things that might be on that recipe page. There's Donna's pumpkin cobbler, of course. And there's a pumpkin pie from Provence, which has a pumpkin pie with a twist. It doesn't have your usual ingredients in it. It has a orange aftertaste, an orange flavor. And there's a pumpkin soup recipe with chutney. And Jan Libby, a farmer who has a CSA, or used to anyway, and she grows squash. There's a recipe here called Jan's Squash Apple Cheddar Gratin. Oh, that kind of hits all the bells and whistles right there. That sounds really good. One thing about the recipe page, we'd love for you to try some of that stuff and then get back to us. I mean, the one time we do hear from people is when I've typed up and logged in the recipe wrong. I did that with the pumpkin pie from Provence, and boy, did I get a couple of, well, they knew who I was. They called me at home. Actually, it was on Thanksgiving morning. I had left out a major ingredient. I can't remember what it was. And so that's one way to get people's attention. Just give them something wrong there. Oh, dear. But I think these are good. Actually, Donna has much more experience writing and communicating and doing recipes than I do. I sort of make them up. So now Donna checks things over. So they're going
to
be good.
Well, you know, if you're in the middle of cooking and you're gone to some effort and you leave out some major ingredient, or you put too much cayenne pepper in it and you ruin the whole thing, it's no fun.
No. Everybody tries to do their best this time of year. This time of year, winter is just coming right at us. And I opened my mailbox the other day. I got 5 seed catalogs already. Usually I don't remember getting seed catalogs so early. It was kind of a shocker there.
It's supposed to be a January item.
Yeah, I always think, oh, good, the holidays are over. The New Year's is done, and now I'll put my feet up. Not that I'm going to open them up and start planning, but my goodness, I was hoping for a little break from the garden. So I put them over to the side. But yes, there they are. And Donna mentioned that, well, maybe people are getting seeds and seed catalogs have got these sort of things in. Christmas gifts for people, huh?
That's not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea. Some people,
for certain people,
yeah,
anyway.
Some people have, or some seed catalogs feature, like, you know, a flower mix or a beginner's children's garden mix or a favorite tomatoes mix or something. Just for, you know, that's a nice thing to put in somebody's stocking. Yeah, seed catalogs. So thinking of Christmas gifts, another possibility for a Christmas gift would be giving a membership to this station. This is community radio.
That's right. One size fits all.
Very good. Yes. So give a membership to this station. KHOI needs your support, and we thank you for those that are members. Encourage others to be members, too. You can buy a member. A membership is $60 a year. You could buy a membership for somebody that you do not know what to buy for. You can get a membership for your friends, or send a membership to somebody you don't even like very well. And won't they be surprised when they get a gift from you, and they'll be supporting community radio. Or you can go to khoifm.org. And on that website, besides finding out all kinds of nice stuff about the programming here, there is a magic donate button, and that will get you a long ways into becoming a member.
Well, it's true that the a membership to the radio station reminds people that we live in a very vibrant community, and we are grateful for that. I believe that because it's an all-volunteer station, and people make all different kinds of shows, different music shows, different talk shows, and it represents many facets of this very creative community that we live in here in Ames, and I am very grateful for my community.
Ah, very good, very good. Well, I just want to take a minute here to share a book that I just read, and this is a local author, and actually I believe he has been featured on the community bookshelf too, but I enjoyed this book because coming into the fall of the year around Halloween, and it's a book about ghouls and ghosties and pixies and kelpies, a lot of Irish mythical folk, believe it or not, set in Winterset, Iowa. Oh, it's one of these kind of detective stories where the local priest is kind of a detective, and he's out exorcising demons and meeting all kinds of people, and feathers and fur flies, and it's really fun. It's called Winterset by Dennis Malsby. Short stories of pixies, demons, and fiends. Dennis Malsby is a author who lives here in Ames, Iowa, with his wife Ruth, and his dog, Charlie, who it says here in the book, is a retired CIA operative. Oh, Charlie might be writing a book soon, too. He's written a number of other books. So that's Dennis Malsby, a fine book. It's a fine book for winter reading. You know, it's kind of...
And it's at the library, right?
It's at the... I get all my best stuff at the library. Dennis Malsby, Malsby. Winterset. A lot of Iowa place names, and oh, they do get into it down there. All kinds of fun things happening. I like to read a fantasy book like that every now and then. It just warms me up. Again with my large cat on my lap. That really helps.
By the fire.
By the fire, yes. Oh, very good. Well, besides making the horseradish cranberry relish, I am going to make just cranberry, just grind some up with some orange flavoring, too, for those that are more traditional. But actually, that's kind of nice. Then you have this pink, fluffy horseradish stuff to choose from, or the more traditional red, because mixing all those colors together on the plate are very good. Very good. Oh, and also, another good thing is mashed potatoes, but also including some rutabaga. Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, I like to put some root vegetables, either parsnips and or rutabaga, into my mashed potatoes.
Very good. I'm going to do that. I found a real... sometimes you don't find rutabaga. It must be a good year I found
one. And celery root also is another root vegetable you can mix into the mashed potatoes.
True.
And
that's
you can
true.
Mix all four of those vegetables together. You can roast them. You can mash them. You can make a soup out of them even.
That's very good. That extra little kick to the potatoes is very good. Well, also you could add garlic to potatoes, but I don't think I'll do that all at once. I'm just going to put a little bit of rutabaga in there. And I was making my grocery list. I couldn't figure out for the world of me how to spell rutabaga, so I just put a big R. But
R-U-T.
It's a T, not a D. R-U-T.
T-A-B-E-G-A or E-B.
Rutabaga.
It's R-U-T, though.
R-U-T, okay. Because I was writing it R-U-D.
Do you remember the, who's that? Frank Zappa song, Rutabaga.
All right, another tradition. We should all sing that for the holidays. Yes, we should. Upcoming next week on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, we'll be talking to a local seamstress, Janae Smith, she has a little store called Thread It. And we're going to talk to her
on
about
Main Street.
Sewing. So yeah. That happens around the kitchen table, too. Also, we'll be kind of looking into the subject of fake meat. That sounds fun, but there's all kinds of...
The future of food. We'll do that one after the New Year's.
I think so, too, because we got things ahead. Always kind of keeping up on what's going on. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had music today by Tom McKenzie and Patty Casey. And they have good stuff. We'll go out with this wonderful winter waltz again. Thank you for joining us today. Find out more about KHOI at khoifm.org. Or contact us by email at khoiradio@gmail.com and put Donna Lana Kitchen in the header up there. Support this station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
You've had excellent engineering by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.